Life is made up of decisions. Some are large, some are small, and some are uniquely individual, and some are thrust upon us. Either way, the decisions we make at these critical crossroads determine the direction of our life story. Welcome to our podcast, If I Knew Then What I Know Now, Insights Through the Rearview Mirror. By sharing the decision-making process of highly successful people in their own lives, and what they have learned both about decision-making and the importance of considering the alternatives, we hope to help you make better and more productive decisions in your life. This podcast will help you consider all your decisions through a new lens. My name is John Kramer, and along with my partner in crime, my brother Paul, we will interview a wide range of successful friends and acquaintances to understand the decisions they have made in life and what they have learned both about decision-making and the importance of reflecting on the process. If I Knew Then What I Know Now, Insights Through the Rearview Mirror, is brought to you by Industry Intelligence, providing decision-making solutions at your fingertips. Thanks for tuning in to our Rearview Mirror podcast series. If you're a first-time listener, welcome. If you joined us before on this journey of discovery to uncover the decision-making processes of interesting and engaging guests, welcome back. Our goal is to help you understand how to make better and more successful decisions. Our contention is every one of us has a fascinating story made up of many decisions over the course of our lives. It's the sum of these decisions that dictate the direction of our journey. These are the insights we're trying to uncover. The key question we will be discussing is, are there more successful decision-making frameworks or constructs? In essence, a better way to assess the alternatives on the table. Today, I'm excited to be speaking with Drayton Howell, the young founder and CEO of Indicut, the first cannabis delivery service licensed through the city of Santa Barbara. He has a fascinating story to share, having at the young age of 23, quit college with a full ride basketball scholarship to start a cannabis business. Needless to say, he has made a number of major life-changing decisions. Drayton, welcome to our show. To put a stake in the ground, as we do with all our guests, do you have a construct that guides you in your decision-making processes?
I do. I like to follow three things that's helped me and even helped me make the big decision to leave college ultimately. And those three things are, one, I always seek wise counsel, whether it's from my mom, my grandma, you know, coaches and people that I trust. Two, I'm a believer, so I like to pray on things, give it to God, have him show me some signs. And then three, I kind of just meditate on it. So those are my three constructs. And that's kind of what has helped me kind of base the framework of my decision making on top of weighing pros and cons and ultimately saying, okay, is this a decision that I feel okay making, not only for myself, but the people that it's going to affect around me. And those people happen to be family, coworkers, and close friends.
That's great. It's kind of consistent with a lot of the people we're speaking to that talk about, you know, their faith, talk about their network, which seems to be a consistent theme through a lot of our conversations. Mm-hmm. And I met you on LinkedIn through a mutual connection, and I was fascinated with your journey. Can you share with us a little about what led you to decide to get into the cannabis business in the first place?
Yes. It was actually the second week before I took off to my university. I was in my buddy's living room on the air mattress at the time, finishing out the last week of summer session before I transferred. And I came across a Vice episode on Steve D'Angelo on Harborside. And I was already fascinated with the cannabis industry, and I knew it was coming to market. And ultimately, I knew that Santa Barbara was opening up an ordinance. And since I had went to school out there, I was like, oh my gosh, this market would just be wide open. So I got to college, and it was September, and I really started to take it serious from like just an idea to, hey, mom, I'm kind of thinking about doing this. But take into consideration, my dad had lost his scholarship for this exact thing, you know, when he was playing basketball. So you could imagine their reaction to this, like, hey, you want to leave your scholarship to go do this? And so it took some, not really convincing, but showing them the business plans that I had been ultimately drafting up in my dorm room after practice every day. I knew my teammates had to have think, oh, this, what is this guy doing? He's new here, first year on campus, and he's just locking himself in his dorm after practice every day and not getting to know people. So November came, and I was having dinner at this restaurant in Santa Barbara. My mom came to meet me, and I kind of just broke it down to her, showed her my, you know, makeshift business plan. And she ultimately let me leave college come at semester's end. I also left for some other reasons. I was going blind. That's another story. But ultimately, I had to show her my business plan. I had to show her that I was serious. And she let me go and embark on this journey. Fast forward to here we are today. Our facility is in front of the hotel that we used to live in when we didn't have anything. So the story kind of comes full circle, and it was just a hell of a journey. I lost so many people along the way. I mean, my best friend, his mom, my uncle, my aunt died of ALS. I mean, during these 2.5 years, I probably lost about 10 people. And I think I had to go through that to get me where I am, to be able to take these punches with this industry. I mean, we can't even have a bank account. And on top of so many, I mean, we get double taxed. I mean, you have to set up very, very interesting business structures. I mean, having management companies to have a bank account. I mean, this is stuff they don't teach you in college. And I was just kind of thrown into all of this, you know, at 22, 21. And I really had to learn how to make fast decisions and quick decisions that are going to, you know, help us. And I think that athletics definitely played a part in that, since I had to be a quarterback in high school, a point guard in college. You know, you always have people coming at you. You have to make quick decisions on the court and out on the field, you know? So I think that definitely helped me translate this into business, and I'm still learning as I go, but these frameworks that we talked about in the beginning definitely helped me along this journey to make these decisions and lead us to where we are, and that's expanding into Michigan and becoming a multi-state operator within years, our first year.
Man, you just threw me so many curveballs. I don't know where to go with some of this stuff. It's like, all right, I'm gonna try to unpack a little bit of it. So what I heard you say is that there was a period of time when you and your family were homeless and you lived in a hotel?
Yes, and our hotel is right behind our facility that we work in today.
And your father lost his scholarship because he got caught smoking dope.
Yep.
talk about coming full circle. So I know you've got the three constructs we talk about: counsel, prayer, and meditation. But you know, within that, there's some nuts and bolts things that you had to do. There was, yes, some decisions that you had to make once you decided to move forward, for, you know, example, developing business plans, budgeting, delivery versus storefront, how to work through the licensing process. Mm-hmm. Those are situations that, you know, I think wise counsel doesn't necessarily fit, because there probably aren't a whole lot of people that have done that before you.
Correct.
I'm not sure the good Lord can help you there either.
No.
And sitting and meditating probably doesn't deliver any answers. How did you come to do all of this?
Oh my gosh. Countless hours of messing up. Countless hours of, well, it started with my tutor, my accounting tutor in college, Zach Rauer. He helped me draft up my first pro forma in Excel. And from there, I kind of used that framework to basically build out my budget. Can I do a storefront first delivery with the budget that I have? I also took into consideration property when I was doing my property search for my dorm room. What can we pay? What's the dollar per square foot? okay, if we gross this much, can we pay this? And I mean, man, it just took hours of pen to paper. That's all I can say. Basically going with all I had at that point, which is, does this look right? Or does this look wrong? I couldn't talk to anybody. And the dispensary owners that I did reach out to, I mean, they never even got back to me. And my consultants that, you know, I ultimately hired once I was 2 months into the licensing to take over the licensing and help me through this process, they couldn't necessarily help me because they were in a different supply chain of the cannabis industry. I was going into retail. They're in distribution and consulting, you know? So a lot of these decisions just came from hours of, okay, is this right or wrong? And trying to talk to some sort of business owners that I know that, you know, my mom has introduced me to over the years. But even then that didn't help because this industry is so foreign to them. So I really just had to do a lot of reading within the regulations and seeing, okay, we're going to have these licensing fees. How is that going to build into our budget on top of workman's comp, on top of just everything that, you know, it was just a lot that I had to do that I never saw myself doing at such a young age. And I really love it. So I think that's why I didn't mind these countless hours of just messing up and not coming out with the right numbers or numbers not adding up or being over budget or being under budget. It just took a lot of time and effort. And like you said, meditation, the good Lord, and seeking wise counsel don't come into play when you're doing stuff like that.
Right. So let me just ask you one. So as I look at it, you were practicing, you were studying, and you were working your business. So I can understand why you don't get any sleep.
Yeah.
And this is just off topic and just because I'm curious.
Yeah.
How did all your strategic work, your budgeting, when it came to the real world, were you accurate there? Today, more than ever, you need to find the right information quickly and easily. Weeding through everything available is like drinking through a fire hose. Industry intelligence is like having your very own research assistant. The first place I go when I need to access data and insights for a client project or a new business solicitation is industry intelligence. Using their powerful patented technology and unique approach to information gathering, curation, and editing, they put everything I need in one place and serve it up in a user-friendly interface. Why not put a data and insight solution partner at your fingertips? For more information, call Chuck Bolcom at 920-891-5496. That's 920-891-5496. And now, for Rearview Mirror listeners, Industry Intelligence is providing a special offer, a 30-day trial membership, absolutely free, when you mention our podcast. So give Chuck a call today. Tell him you're looking for a way to make better decisions. Industry Intelligence, decision-making solutions at your fingertips.
I definitely was, and I don't know how, but it was those hours, and you know, I got to tell you, we almost sold out a month before because we weren't getting our license. And check this out. It's because the Santa Barbara County doesn't allow for provisional state licenses. And that's the first license that the BCC issues to you because you're a new business. Here's your provisional. Show us that you can earn your annual. So from December 8th to March 23rd, we were trying to get our provisional switched to annual because the county of Santa Barbara is the only county city/jurisdiction in California that amended to not allow for provisional uses of your BCC license unless you're grandfathered in by 2016. I was 18 in 2016. So I couldn't even, you know, I was just left to, okay, how do we switch it from annual? And at this time, the BCC, I mean, their response rate was like a week for everything, a week for an email. I mean, we didn't hear back from them from January 8th to February 9th for a simple question as to what's the first step of getting the switch from provisional to annual. So we almost went belly up. I started the company with $900 left and that's because of all the budgeting and everything that I did.
And so when you say, you keep saying we, is that, was it really mostly just you at that point?
Yes. I just say we because my mom, I mean, she sold her own rented property. Yeah,
I understand that. I guess I'm hearing that your mom was quite involved with this, you know, the whole way.
She was involved in the sense of just financial support. At the time, she was doing in-home nursing and hospice. So she was kind of just letting me hammer out the licensing process by myself and just asking me, hey, where are we? She never once questioned me, never once said we should pull out, never once said, are you sure about this? She just supported me the entire way. And I'm just so blessed for that.
So you're now you're in business. Wait a second. Before I go on, let me just go back one thing regarding your health. Are you going, did you say you're going blind?
Yeah, I was going blind while I was at college, and I just thought it was bright lights. Come to find out, I had a very rare eye condition called keratoconus. And it's basically when your cornea is coning instead of being a sphere-like. And the only thing that you can really get for it is obviously a corneal transplant, or there's this new procedure called cross-linking. So insurance doesn't cover this. And we battled with them for 6 months when I got back from school in January of 2019. And it took us, I mean, countless hours of trying to find the right doctor to do it, because there's, what I needed was cross-linking, but there's two types of cross-linking. There's epi-on and epi-off. Epi-off is invasive, and it's basically taking the first layer of your cornea off. Epi-on is basically non-invasive, as you can see. I'm fine right now. But basically, there's only one doctor that's doing it, and his name is Dr. Brian Boxler-Wachler. And there's a TED talk on him. And basically, he presented this to the whole ophthalmology community and just got bashed. They were saying, you're lying. You don't have a 99% success rate on this. Da, 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 da. And it's because he was the only one that can do it. Fast forward, my mom did all this research for me while I was during the licensing process. So that was her job, and the licensing process was my job ultimately. And she found him, and he discounted our surgery by about $2,500. Thank God for that. And I had to get cross-linking and what's called intacts. So the first procedure that I got, they slit the top of my eye. They'll put a suction cup over it, and it lifts it up. They insert the intact manually. You can feel this, but your eyes numb and your other eyes taped shut. But your other eyes open, you're watching them do it. And then as soon as they put the intact in, they put the suction cup back on, push that layer back on, and then they take their fluid, wipe it on, and then kind of like the fluid is like a glue per se, and it kind of shuts that cut. Shut your eye, tape that down, and then open your other eye and do it again. Cross-linking is basically, you can imagine, metal sunglasses per se that lift your eyelids open, and you're under a UV light, and 30 minutes each eye they're wiping on vitamin E, riboflavin, and this other fluid. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a vitamin, and they do that on both eyes for 30 minutes under the UV light. So it's, I mean, thank God for him. I mean, it stopped my vision, and honestly, it repaired some of my vision, and that's the only way that could have happened, because, you know, corneal transplants are so outdated. So I went from seeing 20/70 out of my right eye, 20/65 out of my left eye, to almost back to 20/20.
Well, that's stories get more and more interesting as we go along. So now you're in business with very little practical experience. I've been involved with startups several times in my career, and I know the number of big decisions that need to be made every day without a roadmap.
Yes.
You had a lot of deliverables. How did you decide how to attack this pile of deliverables? And, you know, again, you know, I come back to this wise counsel, pray and meditate. In this instance, that really, those weren't really that helpful here.
No.
You had tactically, you have to do a bunch of stuff. How do you decide what to attack and how to attack it?
So my plan of attack really came down to five things. One, what type of model am I going to run for my delivery? Two, what areas am I going to serve? Three, what products am I going to offer and what price? Four, who's my target market and which demographic am I going for? And five, how are we going to be efficient and effective? So with these taken into consideration, we're located about 45 minutes between both of the biggest market shares, which is Santa Barbara and SLO. So my plan was, okay, we have to double down in Santa Barbara first. This is where we're licensed through. This is where I went to college. This is where I know the most people. And with the limited amount of capital that I had in marketing, I can use my social media platforms and my friends who I ultimately used as models, their reach, kind of like affiliate, you can say, to gain some customers into our platform. I also opted not to charge a delivery fee because I became a consumer of my own business during this build out, I guess you can say. And I said, Dre, what would you pay for a new business startup? Don't know what they're really doing. And you're okay with losing money on it if you have a terrible experience. So I set my minimum at $20. And I wanted that because, you know, nowadays, you know, people do have $20 that they can spare on, you know, an eighth that they don't mind throwing away if they don't like, right? So with that $20, all I had was that one chance to suck them into our loyalty program, get them into our text marketing, and give them a great experience of delivery. So what's going to keep us efficient and effective? Softwares. I chose to onboard with three softwares in the beginning of my company that I saw that would fit what I'm doing best, which was FlowHub, Dutchy, and OnFleet. OnFleet, we mapped to be our menu provider on our website. And we have an API that ties that menu to our dispatch. So as soon as a customer presses checkout, it sends that order, their address, et cetera, to OnFleet, to where our dispatcher can now assign the order and the driver all gets the entire information. So I had to run so many demos and just see how so many deliveries were running and how storefronts were running. And I ultimately wanted to be a storefront on wheels. So I went shopping around, I mean, the entire Central Coast from different stores. I ordered from several deliveries and I took down what I liked and what I didn't like. And I kind of used that as my framework and my roadmap to build out those five things that we talked about in the beginning. And I had to do that very fast. And I mean, there's no data for this on Google. I mean, you don't get to access BDS analytics until you're in the industry. So I kind of had to make my own data with kind of just what I was doing. And I didn't even know if it was right or wrong, but it seemed right to me. And that's what I used. And that's how I built out our first month of operation.
Well, so let me just tell you that I signed up, although I'm not in your geography, I signed up and I'm getting texts from you and I am blown away by the way you've built your business. And
I really appreciate that. I am really impressed.
I am really impressed. And so like, I don't want to jump to the end game just yet, but can you share with us several of the biggest bumps in the road that you went through getting up and running?
Yes. Oh my gosh, the licensing process. And it doesn't make it better that you're the first one through and you're the guinea pig for all this. I mean, yeah, man, sure. I had to fight county council to get three more drivers added to my permit and business license. Just three. I mean, they had to run a traffic and report and just, I mean, everything. But I'm glad that I went through it. And I'm glad that I went through it with the people that I did in the county. And hats off to Stephen Yee, who's in there right now. He was definitely a help. I mean, and although the process seemed long, it was kind of fast when you take into consideration that I was the first one through and everything that we had to deliver that they requested. So, I mean, the licensing process is no easy battle for anybody on the supply chain in any cannabis industry. And just hats off to all the operators that get through, because I mean, it's tough and it takes grit and long nights doubting yourself. And I mean, you really learn a lot about yourself during the licensing process. So I think that it was a good thing for me to go through that. And I'm glad that I did, because if you can get through California, you can get through anywhere. And that's kind of how I seen, okay, I have a window for expansion before big MSOs come in. And I can essentially build out a business that they can ultimately come and make turnkey. So my plan has been to build scale and ultimately sell if I have to. But if I build in scale to where I think I can get us, I think we'll be able to compete with some of these MSOs, not on the capital base, but just on ultimately capturing market share. And that's what I'm going to try to do.
So, and again, this is kind of off topic, but only because I'm so fascinated with what you've done and your process. It seems like one of your core objectives has to be to drive loyalty, because as these Correct. MSOs come in, they're going to have a lot more money and a lot more power.
Correct.
Just with the consumer. And so how have you thought about, you know, sort of building loyalty as you move forward?
Providing product at a great price, because I truly do believe that product's for the people. You have to have variety. You have to know what you're providing. I mean, yeah, the Blue Dreams, the Gorilla Glues, yeah, all that's cool. But that's not what the young consumer crowd wants right now. That's not what's in right now. So I really believe that we have to take a step back in this industry and not try to follow trends, because trends are saturated. This market has been around before you can call it legal. There is a traditional market. There is a black market, and that's where it started, and it's doing very well, and it's going to continue to do very well because of these taxes that we throw onto these consumers. So what we're trying to do is combat this, and what I'm trying to do is kind of bring to light that, hey, you're never going to have a market share if you don't provide them what they want at the price that they want, because they can go right down the street and get whatever they need, you know, at the price that they want. So,
yeah, so they got, you got to lock these people into you.
You got to lock these people into you by providing great service, deliveries under an hour, also keeping them in the loop with, hey, you are in the legal market and this is how we operate. So they can track our drivers in real time once they're assigned to them. It's kind of like Uber for weed. They can see their driver all the way up until they get to their front door, and there's notifications on the way. I mean, OnFleet's a great dispatch system, and they're great partners of mine, and they are a big reason as to why we can do the volume that we're doing at the rate that we're doing it at.
So at this point, you've been in business for 10 months. Tell us, what are the two biggest surprises you've encountered that you didn't plan for, and how did you address them?
Oh my gosh. Taxes.
You can tell us three if you want.
Oh my gosh. Wow. There's a lot. One, getting people's attention is very hard. You have like 30 seconds to capture their attention. And what you do with that is ultimately who's going to be loyal to you. And we have about 3,000 people in our loyalty program in this short time. So I think that I've done a decent job of scoping out what people want, building out menus that are different every month, providing them what they call fire at the low price, and just being a consumer to your own business. That's kind of what I've been like. I've had to be a consumer of my own business. Dre, what would you pay if you're in these people's shoes? How would you feel if your delivery was an hour and a half late? Would you want a pre-roll? Would you want a discount? So I really just put my foot into my consumer's shoes, because I've been on both ends of the world. I've been down and out, and I've ultimately been able to become a semi-successful business owner. So I can relate to a lot of people because I've been in a lot of situations in my life.
I like being a consumer to your own business. I think that is a great, great comment and a great insight. And I think that that's something that is missing. So that's a really powerful message to the world. I think that's important. As I'm sure you know, the cannabis business has experienced some growth challenges, no pun intended. what are your current plans to grow the business, and how did you think through those plans?
Yes, I thought through those plans on a lot of different bases, capital being one of them. Capital being one of the main reasons. Two, risk diversification is very important to me. Although we're doing good now, you never know who's going to come into the market. You have to diversify yourself. You have to get into other markets and establish your brand, establish your market share. That was the main reason behind the move to Michigan. It's a new state. I think it's a very promising market. And there's not a lot of people that I see doing it at the level that I think that I can do it at out there. And I think there's some big players out there. Gage, Common Citizen, you have Loom, which will be next to me. And you have a handful of, I can go down the entire list. Mm-hmm. So I'm seeing what they're doing and how they're gaining their traction. And I'm also figuring out, okay, this is what I'm doing in the Mecca in California. This is what I can provide. So I think that, you know, when people say, hey, Dre, how are you going to manage state to state? Well, I can't really answer that question because they're not in my shoes. They don't get to see my vision ultimately. But my goal is to be, you know, a semi-big multi-state operator. After Michigan, that's not it. I plan to hopefully be in another state, hopefully two states by the end of 2021. Reason being is that it's diversifying my brand. It's bringing more value to the company. And now I'm getting my name out in several states versus just trying to, what people say, lock down California, which is not possible, in my opinion, because you have Cookies, you have Runts, you have, you know, the Jungle Boys doing it, but you have that $1 billion black market that you're competing against as well. So you have to take all that into consideration, especially with the big MSOs who are trying, like Caliva, you know, $573 million on their balance sheet in cash that they're deploying this year in California, you know. So you have to take that in consideration when you're building out your business plan, I feel like. And I mean, everybody's situation is different. Everybody doesn't want to be an MSO, but I feel like you have to be an MSO if you want it to be taken serious in this industry, because those are the players that are coming into this game. Whether they do it right or wrong.
Have you ever thought about a franchise model?
I have. We're discussing it. And I definitely think that's going to take us to the next step. But I'm trying to base the framework on what I'm doing now so we can have a great set franchise model. You know, when you're taking into consideration, you know, Michigan's regs versus California, we have to have a framework for state to state, you know, expansion as well as operations. And also, we have to also take into consideration what point of sale systems are going to be going to state to state. And that's what I've been doing now, is reevaluating the softwares that I'm using to get ready for my multi-state move. So there's a lot of things you have to take into consideration, I feel like, but that's basically kind of my take on this and my plan of attack.
So there seems to be so many decisions mm-hmm. that need to be made as you start mm-hmm. to grow the business and move to new markets, but then correct. Also in managing the day-to-day business
yes.
you're currently dealing with. Mm-hmm. How do you prioritize that in terms of, you know, it seems like you're the guy making most of the decisions and driving the direction. How do you do that?
I feel like it's an it factor. I feel like you either have it in you or you don't. And like I said, I have to give my props to my background in athletics. Just being at the forefront of being a quarterback and being a point guard, and you know, you have to make quick decisions. You have to make big decisions. You know, you're driving down the field and it's fourth quarter. What are you going to do? You're driving down the field. You know, someone's coming at you. What are you going to do? You got to move. What are you going to do when you're expanding your business? Competition's coming in. How are you going to diversify yourself? What's your plan of attack? What's your marketing? Oh, they're pricing at this point. Well, we need to price at this point. So I feel like my competitive nature has translated very well into this crazy competitive market. And I feel like it's a it thing. And I feel like I have it, and I'm hungry, and I don't mind working 15-hour days. I don't mind working 14-hour days and getting up the next day and doing it again. I like it. And since I've been through so much, I feel like, hey, what do you really have to lose? I have everything to gain. I've been to the bottom, so I'm not going back. I mean, my reminder is when I go to work every day, I see the hotel that I live in. It's like, Dre, well, you're one decision away from going back to that. So that's my hunger.
So finally, as you look back over this fascinating journey, I've told you this on our previous phone calls and over the man, you blow me away. You blow me away. Is there anything that you'd have done differently looking through the rearview mirror? Are there decisions that you made to say, that was probably a wrong one? Should have done something differently. As you look back, what are some of those? They've got to exist.
Yes, a lot of them. I think my biggest three are, one, timing is really everything. I've learned to be patient. I've learned to let things work themselves out. Two, I've learned not to dwell on when I've taken losses. I've learned that, okay, yeah, it might've cost me some money, but it's going to save me a ton down the road. And three, I've learned to love to fail, because that's going to be your only teacher. And once I accepted that, I feel like a weight just came off my shoulders and just allowed me to say, let's just operate, whether I'm doing it right, whether I'm doing it wrong, whether I'm on point that day, or whether I'm having a terrible day. I've learned to just love to take the losses and celebrate the little wins as they come.
You know, something that was brilliant. And I need to just reinforce that in terms of patience. Everything doesn't have to be done this second. Don't dwell on losses and love to fail. You know, Amazon approaches everything with the concept of fail fast, fail cheap. And I talk to my clients all the time about that. And I think that really is a great summary. So, Drayden, I want to thank you for sharing the decisions that you've made on your journey. I thought this was really a fascinating discussion. And one final thought this week as we close. Paul and I are a bit disappointed in ourselves that we've not suggested our listeners reach out to us to assist in our journey. So with this in mind, if you have any thoughts on what you'd like to hear more of or have any guest suggestions, please reach out to us at info@rearviewinsights.com. That's info@rearviewinsights.com. We'll try to answer all your questions and communications as quickly as possible. So until next week, this is John Kramer wishing you thoughtful and wise decision-making.
You've been listening to Insights Through the Rearview Mirror. Each week, we speak with interesting people, exploring their decision-making processes to understand how these change their lives. Check out our past guests at www.rearviewinsights.com and click on the link to listen on iTunes. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate us, and leave a comment. Until next Friday, this is John Kramer wishing you insightful and successful decision-making.